Who do we trust the most? The one that reads our mind. If you're an employee of a company, you're a marketer running for that company, say you're the CMO or whatever you are, like, or you're just a sales guy, and you walk into your boss's office, whether he's the owner or just higher level, and you say, hey man, look, I don't want to like put anything on you, but I saw this crazy podcast and this like super handsome guy, Jim, and like this other guy, Preston, were talking. And they were talking about like the business really wants the best return on balance sheet equity for their investments aligned with their return on debt. And look, I know that a sale of our product is effectively a solution to someone else's problem. Everybody buys every product to get out of pain. How do we create a problem, solution, problem situation for our marketing?
Welcome to the B2B Digital Marketer Podcast, a podcast helping you to end your struggle with digital marketing, helping you to pave a new and better path to target and capture your ideal customer. Each week, we teach you how insiders and experts debunk the dreary and become engines of innovation. Now, here's your host, Jim Rembach.
Okay, B2B DM gang, we're going to have a great discussion today because I've got somebody with high energy who actually has really used that energy wisely. And I think that's really the important point here. I have Preston Brown. Preston, welcome.
Thank you, brother. Excited to be here.
Okay, so now before we actually get into some of this great discussion, if you could just give a little bit of background to the B2B DM gang about you and your expertise.
Yeah, sure. You want the defining story? You want like, everybody judges the story by the ending. I like to go at the beginning if I've got 3 minutes. Does that work?
Yeah, it works. Absolutely.
Cool. So I'll give you the ending first. I'm a centimillionaire with 18 operating businesses and I run none of them. I've bought two of them and the rest I went from startup all the way through the scale process. Story is, when I was 7 years old, I lived in a trailer park outside of Canyatillo. My dad decided to open his own business, quit his job. Job stands for just over broke. It's whatever you take to compromise on your dreams, right? Well, dad decided to start his business. Beautiful man. Engineer by trade, badass, 6'4", broad shoulders, football player, like guy that caught ball in one end zone, ran into the next zone. My hero, man. And opens a business, goes out to the shed outside of our trailer, works in that El Paso sun and heat. And he's working there, you know, 8 a.m., sometimes to 8, 9 p.m. We stole an air conditioner because we were freaking broke to keep the guy cool. Well, my dad missed a few pieces of the entrepreneur journey, didn't know how to build, didn't know how to collect, didn't know how to charge. During this process, my mom loses the job. Eventually, money gets scarce, a month or two in. The fight happens. I don't remember all the words, but I remember the cast iron frying pan, you know, those big ones flying across the room. And I remember saying these things: a real man can feed his family. Go collect or don't come home. And that, we had tons of love. Never heard anything like that. Never saw anything like that. But my mom was serious. We drove up to a man's house. I knew what was going to happen. This guy lives not far from where I live now, funny enough. But guy's all 5'9". There's my dad, 6'4". I knew we were going to collect our money. He was going to demand it. We were going to get it. We're going to go home. Everything's going to be fine. But that's not what happened. This man leveraged my dad. He went from demanding to asking to begging to groveling. As a seven-year-old, I watched my hero compromise everything for money. I watched my hero give up. I watched my hero say, hey, you know what? I'll take a fraction. And we left. We rode down to the local Smith's where an Albertsons is now. We collected a few bucks. I rode back with ramen noodles on my lap, and I got to see a man that never cried cry for the first time, and I got to experience a thing called hatred for the first time. Made me a corporate son of a bitch. I built 18 companies, became phenomenally wealthy, did it all because I wanted to heal the wound that was my dad's poverty and my dad giving up on his dreams as an entrepreneur so he could stay my father, because my mom never kidded around. 2019, dad passed away. First time I've lost love. I gave up on this whole ideal that money is the meaning of life. Didn't give up on entrepreneurship, didn't give up on creation, but it changed my perspective. And I got into teaching and I got into doing stuff like this and getting around amazing people like you and sharing information, because there's not just one part of the journey. There's four. There's faith, there's family, there's fitness, there's finance. And losing Papa taught me that I needed to focus more on the other three, because all I was focused on was finance. So that's where I am now. I've got a ton of companies And I'm excited to share anything that helps any of your audience take it to the next level.
Well, and I appreciate you sharing that backstory because I think it's critically important for people to kind of know where we came from and what drives us and, you know, how we take this crooked path oftentimes and sometimes a backwards path in order to be able to move forward. One of the things that we had the opportunity to chat about, and you have definitely a wealth of learnings that you can share, but we really talked about, and you kind of hit on it a little bit when you were telling your story, is the different returns that we can expect when we're actually engaged in business, looking to grow a business, maybe even exit a business, right? We have to look at all of these from a value perspective. And so you talk about six returns that you expect in a business. So if you could just kind of run through those six returns that we should expect and then also, you know, deliver upon. And we're going to hone in on three of those that are absolutely critical to our listeners. So if you could, what are the six?
So, and let me say it this way, the reason for these six, and I'm going to send you all of the documents. In fact, Jesse, make sure we send Jim all of the documents, all of the formulas, everything, and let's go over the six returns right now. Entrepreneurs don't always focus on what they're doing wrong. We get excited. Like we're optimists by trade, or we wouldn't be entrepreneurs, right? So we focus on what we're doing right. So I'm a pessimist / realist / entrepreneur, which means I had to be an optimist. And so I was like, how am I screwing it up? Like, what am I doing wrong? And one of the things that I always heard people talk about was this first return, which is called ROI, return on investment. And one day I was talking to a mentor and he threw a problem into the gears for my brain. And I love solving problems. I love problems. They're gifts. But he said, well, your return's infinite. And I said, well, no, but I'm making this much annually. He's like, yeah, but you got all your money back. And then I was like, holy shit, this is wow for me. I shouldn't even be talking about a return on investment. If I've received the investment back, it's an infinite return. I'm using the wrong language patterns. I'm literally stroking myself. It's a pointless venture. And so I had to shift. I was like, okay, well, what am I getting? What is my return on? I mean, business is like fishing. You take a small piece of meat, you throw it in the water, you get some back. So there is a return in there, but it's no longer the initial investment. It's no longer the seed. Okay, well, that one becomes return on marketing, which is the second return. And which return should you be focusing on? First of all, before we even go into the other four, the one that you have the weakest, okay? Like if your weakest return is, say, return on marketing, that's the one we should be talking about. If you've gotten all your money back out of your business, your ROI on your business is more than 100%. Like if you've started it with 50 grand, you've already made 100, guess what? 200%. At a certain point, it becomes infinite. It's stupid to even measure. So it goes to return on marketing. Return on marketing is critical. It's what is the cost of customer acquisition? If I spend $2,000, do I get a customer? If the lifetime value of that customer to me is $55,000 and I have the capacity to service 100 of these customers right now, where do I get $200,000? Because holy smokes, say the lifetime value of the customer is $55,000 and it's a 3-year customer. Why would you not just go get $200,000 today if you had to borrow it at 30% interest and get those customers if you have the capacity to serve? So ROM is what ROI turns into. The next one is ROB, return on balance sheet equity. Okay, every lender, if you haven't looked at your financials, you got an income statement, you got a balance sheet, you got a statement of cash flows. The lender is looking at the business as a potential asset. If they are going to finance you, regardless of what business you're in, they want to see there's equity in the company. So a balance sheet has assets, liabilities, and this is a simplification, obviously. And one minus the other equals assets. So that asset level, that equity level of asset minus liability is your balance sheet equity. So your return on this is something you want to measure because that's what the bankers like to see. That's the safe stuff. And why are we saying bankers? Because the bankers say the return on marketing from your product could be, I don't know, 80% or 100% or 300% or whatever it is. If debt is 6%, guess where you get your money to scale? Well, the next one, ROD, return on debt. So return on debt and return on balance sheet. Any business I go into and I'm trying to scale it, I want to get as much debt as I can within my capacity. If I can only do 100 customers and I don't want to borrow more money than I need, okay? So whatever your capacity is should dictate what you borrow. Then I get that many customers in and I'm borrowing the money. Then I'm taking the money I've earned if we're in a good market and reinvesting it back into the company adding more systems, adding more software, adding more tools, increasing the balance sheet equity until balance sheet equity and debt have the exact same ROB and ROD are an equally aligned trajectory or close. Next, returns, ROE, okay? And this one came to me because I used to go to all these seminars and all these gurus would always say, you got to hustle your way to success. Oh, it's hustle. You know, everybody that is successful has this hustle thing in common. And I would see so many businesses fail. And I was like, but they hustled. But the difference is they weren't passionate about the business they were in. The best lie the devil ever told is seeded with an ounce of truth. If you are going to hustle, it doesn't feel like work if you were passionate about it. My wife walks into the bedroom in lingerie. There's not one part of me that's like, I better hustle. You know, I'm passionate. I love the woman. Okay. So like, you're just there. You show up. Like if you love the problem you solve, which is the sale you create for your customer, there's no need to hustle. It comes naturally. You're already energetically aligned. This is your passion. This is your gift. This is your gift to the fucking world. You're on, right? So like, that's return on emotion, return on energy. It costs me no energy to do something like this, because I love talking to guys like you, because you're world changers. You're going out and lifting everybody up on earth and making sure you're giving them good data and information. So I'm like, shit, this is fun. You know, I don't have to work. It's not like, oh man, I better go like absolutely like get juiced or anyway, you get it. The next one, ROT, return on time. Because at a certain point, like, look, in your 20s and 30s, it's real easy to say, hey, you know what? I can go work 80 hours a week. I can do this. I could do that. But at some point, man, my kids are cute. You know, my wife, there, my wife, that's a smoking hot woman. You know, thank God for good women with bad taste in men. Why I am with her, I have no idea. Maybe I can sell. But I want to hang out with them. I like my wife. I like my kids. I want a return on time. I want a business. I want a purpose. I want a passion. I want all that. But I want to hang out with my wife, my daughter, my son, my friends. I want a return on time so I can enjoy the juice and the squeeze. So, going back over, ROI, it's important when you're starting. ROM, it's important when you're operating from a marketing standpoint. ROB, return on balance sheet equity. ROD, return on debt. And then ROT, return on time, and ROE, return on emotion and energy. Those are the six returns.
Okay, so now, and as you're talking, somebody might be sitting there saying, well, I'm not an entrepreneur. And but as you're going through these things, I'm like, it doesn't matter. I mean, we all, especially when you start looking in, it doesn't matter the size of organization. If you don't have this level of business acumen, you're going to follow down the wrong path, because it's like what you had said. Well, I'm going to still be focusing in on this ROI concept where I shouldn't even be looking at that. Right. Matter of fact, it even reminds me of a conversation I had yesterday where we were going over a financial model for a particular lead generation program for one of my potential prospects, potential customers. And he says, but how much does it cost? And I'm like, it doesn't matter if it doesn't pay back, right? I mean, what does the cost matter? And that's not the issue here. The issue is, what are we actually bringing in as new customers? And what are they potentially going to be to us if we convert them? And now we have these revenue streams. And he goes, and he stops for a second. He goes, okay, that's a fair point. So if we don't build our business acumen and understand these things, the only thing we will look at and make our decisions is cost.
If all you're focused on is the cost, you're never going to get the benefits. I mean, a mentor I had years ago said, those who spend all of their time protecting what they have never have enough time to focus on what they want. And that's the same thing as worrying about the cost. Worry about the benefit. I have no concern. If you tell me it's $1 million or $10 million, okay, what's in it for me? Thank you for telling me the cost. That's what's in it for you. I don't care about what's in it for you if there's enough in it for me.
Yeah. So, okay. So then therefore, you know, you shared those six. I want to see if we can spend a little bit of time and dig a little bit deeper on the ROM, the ROB, and the ROD. So if you could, please start with ROM and explain that a little bit more deeply for folks.
Okay, so ROM. And this, guys, this is like a, figuring this out, I had like seven businesses. I was like this entrepreneur, that did good enough to get into business with one business, but not good enough to like automate it. And so I was so exceptional at getting into business that I decided to be exceptional getting into seven. And it's kind of like being a terrible parent with one kid, so you had six more. It is a good analogy for it. And this became, because like once you get in this loop where you, oh shoot, I have way too much on my hands, I got to start automating. When you're going from that operational entrepreneur to the entrepreneur, you know what you're doing. You have the same amount of business, but you're hiring a bunch of people. Like you're hiring like new humans, new softwares, new vendors, lenders, trades. I mean, it's expensive. So going from the operational entrepreneur where you're a slave to your business to the entrepreneur is a huge pay cut. And it's where this thing of ROM comes in, because if you don't learn it, then your lifestyle goes down by about 80%. Because having all the time in the world, but 20% of the money that you need to live on is a normal part of the entrepreneur journey. And frankly, something critical for any salesperson, okay, that's hiring even an assistant. So ROM became huge. I started looking at, okay, well, what is the value of my customer? And I'm going to use, say, a property management company, for example. The value of my customer for the lifetime of that customer, call it say 4 years, is like 12 grand. My cost of acquisition for that customer was 1200. Well, how much are you gonna spend on $1,200? If you go out and hire a salesperson that costs you $2,400 a month, that factors into your cost of customer acquisition. That equals two a month. Okay, well, if you're doing two a month, then that means that in 4 years, you're going to be exiting two a month. So you better figure out a new way to add more, because basically you've got four times 12 times two is the total size and capacity you could ever have for this property management company when you look at, you know, the flows of capacity and how they work. Okay. And so I'm looking at the lifetime value and I'm like, all right, well, if that's the cost and that's the benefit. So, you know, I've got 12 grand, I've got 1200. Like, all right, so basically I'm going to subtract 1200 from 12 grand. How fast can I spend this based on my current cash flow? And I had some of my own cash because I was flipping homes and doing other things at the same time. And so I started dumping it in. I started doing marketing. I started giving discounts up front so people could try our services, all of this, because I knew the lifetime value of the customer, of this small business that was making almost no money at this point, because I made some money doing it myself. I hired people. Now the money was gone, but it was automated. And all of a sudden we went from like 80 units to 400 in a year and a half. And then it's continued since then. This is 8 or 9 years ago, but it was a complete change in the dynamic because I could leverage over 4 years, if you're looking at, okay, well, 12 grand in 4 years, well, then what's your average per year? Well, each customer buys you that many new customers per year, which means year two, your cash flow is already going excessive. So you're looking at what's the lifetime value of the customer? What's the cost of customer acquisition? This is the huge number. And by the way, how much should you pay for a lead? It's simple formula, two rules. One rule, more than everybody else, and only if you're profitable. So if you follow those two rules, your business is doing this. And all of a sudden, like whether it's a business, whether it's a sales job, whether you're a financial planner and a 1099, or whether you're a home builder, it doesn't matter. Cost of customer acquisition is one of the single most important numbers, which is ROM. It's taking like fishing, a little meat, putting it on a hook, throwing the hook in the water. And then once you get a tug, pull, and you got the fish out. Now you got a whole lot more meat. You got dinner. So, but you have to not just measure it at the beginning, but you measure it continuously on what's called, and I don't care if you're a business owner, I don't care if you're an employee, I don't care what you do. This is a key performance indicator that you measure in an ongoing capacity, because everybody talks about managers and business or managers and life or whatever, and it's bullshit. What you really need to look at is measurers, because if I know the projected numbers on ROM, and then I start doing it, I should update those numbers every month to make sure that the projections match the actuals, okay? Your budget should be actualized.
Okay, so hold on one second. Okay, because for me, I've had this discussion many times, and I was even looking at some statistics associated, especially with companies that are in a, you know, just say growth phase, startup growth phase. You know, say, you know, that if you start looking at the traditional venture capital and private equity models, I mean, you know, okay, so they invest in your company, say they give you 10 million bucks, and the first thing they tell you to do is build out your sales and marketing and start churning. And so for some of these companies, they're spending as much as 120% of what their annual revenue is per customer to go through that, that marketing and sales and acquisition process. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, so I'm not one that's ever borrowed money from private equity or any of those things. I have not taken on, I mean, I partner with some investor friends on stuff where I put in money and they put in money, but I've never used somebody else's cash to grow a business. My thoughts on that is if you have a good enough idea, which is what a business really is an idea, okay? Like a business is an idea. It's a belief that something is possible and you could solve a problem and build a better mousetrap better than somebody else, right? That's what a business is. And even when you break down belief, B equals being and leaf equals love, like be love. If you have a stupid belief, you probably need some relief and re-love the belief, right? So like, dude, if you're going after a venture capital guy for your idea, why didn't you just go to your customer first? Like if somebody's going to invest money to help you scale, your idea is probably good enough not to need them. Like I have launched businesses leveraging the customer's money, okay? And saying, hey, I can do this, this, and this. And here's how I can do it. And I'm going to need this much now and this much this. And the customer will pay it in draws. And then you get to the next. Everything depends on the model. But I am so against borrowing money or raising money before you start or to start up or to do radical scale. And this is no different than we haven't gotten here yet, but we're going to get to ROB and ROD, return on debt and return on balance sheet. Venture capital is not cheap money. Okay, which means your ROD, your return on debt, is going to be way lower because you have to pay a much higher percentage. Like you can go to traditional lenders, you can go to banks. If you want to go and pull in a partner or somebody else that has this same level of passion for what you're doing that you do, even that's fine. But when you're going to like some fund out there, God, be careful. I've heard so many nightmare stories and so many people that lost their businesses and... Venture capital is very good at taking great ideas away from great entrepreneurs and owning them because they bought them, which really means they bought you. It's not different than having a job. Like, just go get a job if that's what you want to do.
Gotcha. Okay, so let's move on to ROB.
Okay, ROB is return on balance sheet equity. Okay, and effectively, if you want to call it anything else, retained earnings. Okay. And there's so many ways to do this. I mean, it's just, you can retain earnings in cash. Okay. When you have a balance sheet, there's assets. I'll use a home building company I have. Okay. When you're a home builder, you know what percentage of the project you finance? All of it. Most banks let you leverage all of it. It's really an interesting thing. Well, what do you think happens when the economy tightens? Then the banks are like, well, we should loan less to them, which means your business shrinks. Unless you what? When you made money, you acquired assets. In other words, you didn't go to a developer and borrow money for lots. Maybe you buy your own lots. Or what I like to do, like I'll still borrow on lots and I'll still borrow on construction for my homes. So it's just part of the nature of the business. But every time we get a funding check, I'm buying into multifamily syndications. And I'm doing it for two reasons. One, my balance sheet equity goes up. My home building company now owns 2,500 apartment units as of the last year. So that home building company, last year, I think we made $9 million and we put about $8 million into $7 million into multifamily syndications. And when we did that, because of these things called bonus depreciation and cost segregation, it lowered my income based on government tax laws by as much as we'd made while increasing my balance sheet. Saved me 40% of $9 million on taxes. 40% of that bill gone. And I own 2,500 more apartment units than I did, which means later those are selling. I'm cash flowing on those the whole time. And my balance sheet went up. Now the economy's in this state of, well, uncertainty. You have people that are so pro-trans that they said that, oh, it's transitory inflation. right? They're so pro-trans that we're not in a recession, even though we've had two negative calendar quarters. We're in a transition. Meanwhile, every indicator is poor. Now, when we're looking at this, we're saying, wow, so where are we? We're in a state of uncertainty. Well, all the builders that borrow 100%, the banks are saying, I don't want a loan. I don't want a loan. I'm scared of you. When they see all this equity invested in multifamily units all over Texas, which is a safe area where inflation is causing rents to go up like crazy, they're saying, oh, that guy's smart. Let's loan him more money. Because we still need to make loans if we want to stay in business, because that's our business. But let's grow that guy. Look at his balance sheet. A, he doesn't pay taxes because he's really smart and he follows all the laws the politicians put in place. But B, he's got a shitload of equity. He's safe. If he doesn't pay his bills, we own 2,500 apartment units. They love that.
Most definitely. Okay. So ROD.
Return on debt. And this kind of goes back to what you were saying about the venture capitalist. Guys, you don't need debt. Okay. I'm going to tell you something. Debt is good if it's the right debt. Debt is about one thing: productivity. If you have debt that generates production, it is good debt. If you make more than what the debt costs you without significantly damaging your ability to produce and or your like, I love non-recourse debt. A lot of startups can't get that, but like there's different types of debt. You know what? Let's just stick to the debt with productivity, because I don't even want to get into the consumer debt and commercial debt. And all. There's so many types of debt. If you guys have questions on debt, you can message me. We can get into long conversations. I love conversations about debt. It's so fun. But debt equals productivity. If you finance a TV, that is not productive. If you finance a car, oh my God. Like if you didn't have a car and you say you're an employee or a business owner, but you bought a car, like say a Hyundai, maybe not a Ferrari, but to start with a Hyundai, and that made it so you could go to work, so that you could, you know, produce things, so you could generate a living. The value of the production was far more than the cost of the debt. The car made you productive, okay? If you buy a home and it's cheaper than renting, well, guess what? Productive. If you buy equipment to do something in your business, productive. If I'm borrowing money to build a house and say I'm gonna sell the house and I'm gonna get a funding check for 120 grand and 30 is cost and 90 is profit, but I borrowed money and the money cost me 12 grand. And that's in the 30 that I'm getting rid of. Would you want to pay 12 in debt to make 90? It's productive debt. Now, there's unproductive debt. And this is where optimists die. This is where entrepreneurs go crazy. They're like, oh, well, interest is a write-off. Not always. So it's not always a write-off. Like it may not be a write-off on your car. Like it may not be a write-off in other areas. Like there's technically ways to do things, but do not go borrow money to buy a computer. Do not go borrow money to buy a TV. You want return on debt. If there is debt that increases production, then there's an ROI, a return on that somebody else's investment. Somebody else is making an investment in that debt, and there's a return you can calculate. But you're kind of looking at that debt almost the way you look at marketing. If you have a marketing budget, you're saying, hey, I'm spending X. What am I getting back? If you're borrowing money, hey, they're spending X. What am I getting back? We know what they're getting. They're getting the interest. They're very interested in that. But you don't want the venture capital debt. You don't want the high interest rate debt. You don't want the debt where it costs you 50% of your profits. Guys, bank rates right now, or even with the, you know, increased rates and the rates that they're going to increase, what, 6%, 5.5%? Like, I mean, that's cheap money. That's really cheap. If you can make 20 or 30%, you can borrow at 6%. The question is, how much capacity do I have to do this? And if they trust you and they say, oh, wow, this guy's a good entrepreneur. He's doing another startup or he's doing this or that. Let's loan him 100 grand because we think he can make 300 with it. Guess what? Then you go in and you reinvest your profits into the balance sheet. Say your balance sheet equity is here. Let's see if I can do this with my arms for the camera. Your balance sheet equity is here and your debt return is here. Your goal is to align them. So you want this debt coming down and the balance sheet going up. When they're even, your scale is in this Goldilocks zone. And oh, whew, this is where you're having fun. Everybody's talking about you. You're sometimes you might feel like you're hanging onto a Ferrari, you know, full pedal down by the bumper, like, ah! But man, your business is going, and it's exciting. This is where the juice meets the squeeze meets like, and we call this an optimized business. Why? Because when a business hits those two levels, that's the single best time to sell the company.
Okay. So if I'm sitting here, I'm, like I said, I'm not an entrepreneur. I'm in charge of, you know, sales and or marketing for a particular organization who is in their growth phase. You know, what are three things that I need to focus in on in order to make sure I make better decisions and not just go straight to the cold expense thing?
So, and I always love that. And I love the way you frame that, because I hear a lot of employees say, oh, I'm not an entrepreneur. You know what I always ask them? Do you work for one? I mean, if you work for one, do you know what everybody in business or frankly life wants? It's all the same thing. And this is so fun. Like everybody in business, vendor, lender, customer, owner of the company, they all want the exact same thing. Employee, by the way, certainty of success. So who do we trust the most? The one that reads our mind. If you're an employee of a company, you're a marketer running for that company, say you're the CMO or whatever you are, like, or you're just a sales guy, and you walk into your boss's office, whether he's the owner or just higher level, and you say, hey man, look, I don't want to like put anything on you, but I saw this crazy podcast and this like super handsome guy, Jim, and like this other guy, Preston, were talking, and they were talking about like the business really wants the best return on balance sheet equity for their investments aligned with their return on debt. And look, I know that a sale of our product is effectively a solution to someone else's problem. Everybody buys every product to get out of pain. How do we create a problem solution problem situation for our marketing? And if you go ask that question to your boss, they're going to be like, what do you mean problem solution problem? Well, I want to create something, whether it's a short video or a Facebook post or something that says, hey, we see that you have this issue. Okay. Here is a great way to solve it. When you do these things, it's going to create these problems. Once those happen, call us. We'll get you through them like that. You now prove that you're an expert because you showed them they have a problem. They already know that. They just didn't know what to do about it. You showed them a solution. Wow, you've already moved them. You know who people trust? People that move them. Then you tell your boss, can we make an investment in that? You don't even need to know what's on their balance sheet. Can we make an investment in that? And where should you go make the investment? How about where your customers are at? Like, go where they're at. Like, you know what influences people? What already influences them? What they're already triggered by is what they'll be triggered by in the future. So if you go make an investment in that, whether it's capital up front, whether it's return on debt, and you're getting the company to expensively borrow something, you're speaking a language that somebody above you that pays your salary understands. You know what happens to your value when they know that you're thinking of their best interest? Holy shit. Like that's, huh, let's promote that guy. Hey, he should be running the company.
It kind of reminds me of a story like 15 years ago. So I went through Dr. Robert Cialdini's Science of Persuasion workshop many years ago. And I was chatting to this guy during the break, and we started talking about an issue that he was dealing with the boss above him. I said, well, let me ask you a question. I said, when you go into this guy's office, I said, what do you see? And he says, I see coffee from all over this world. This guy's a coffee fanatic. He gets stuff shipped in from all different parts of the world. I said, okay, so what do you think and feel about coffee? He goes, I hate it. I said, that's your first problem. That's your first problem. I said, if you want him to agree with anything that you put on his table, you need to start showing some interest in coffee. I said, otherwise, yeah, get out of there.
And you know what everybody wants to talk about? What they're terrified of. They want to talk about what they're terrified of. What is the entrepreneur, if you're the employee, worried about right now? Well, they're worried. Hey, man, the economy's getting tough. Inflation's a real thing. Sales are starting to shrink. How do we get to the next level selling our product? And you know when somebody's going to trust you? When they feel like you give a shit. Oh, wow. So nobody, remember what mom said? Like, nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. Well, let me give you another one from mom, okay? My mom was a powerful lady, psychology lady. Like, she was no BS. She used to always say, you got to think outside of the box. The presupposition being, if you think inside of the box, you're kind of stupid. And if you think outside of the box, maybe you're a little smart. And you know what the box is? It's the identity that we have. Our identity is something we are trapped inside of, okay? Like, it's hard for us to think outside of our identity. Don't believe me? Dude, just go watch politics on any of the news channels, whether you're right or left. People cannot see the other side. They are so in blame. They are so in judgment. They won't even listen, okay? They're in their box. Now, let me give you another one that really works with business. And it really works when you're a change maker, okay? And a change maker doesn't have to be a business person. It can be an employee in the company. What if you built boxes for other people to think in? Ooh, holy smokes. Now think about the presupposition here. Hey, think outside of the box. You're smarter than the guy that thinks inside of the box. What if you built a box for somebody else to think in? What if you were able to go and talk about their pain, going back to, hey, here's the problem that we have. Sales are lowering, boss. Here's the solution. I've talked with these three sources. Jim's got this lead generation division of his company where he can come in and sell us this or produce this or do this. And then there's these other guys over here. And I've vetted this. Here's where I see the best one over here. And start speaking to their pain. And what are you doing? Problem, solution. They can get us this. They have this irresistible guarantee. They got this over here. And whatever the value proposition is. And then go to another problem. But look, boss, I've done all this extra research. I've stepped even outside of my role. Normally, I'm just in sales, but I care. I don't have the authority to do this. I want to make us look good. I'm on your team. How do I do this? You know what you just got, dude? More authority. Problem, solution, problem. What's the problem? I don't have enough authority. What's the solution? Hey, promote me, baby. I love you. I mean,
seems simple.
Common sense is not common. Like, I have gone to Walmart, Target, all of them. They don't sell it, but it's never that complex. You know what complexity is? It's seductive, not productive. Productivity gets you paid. Seductivity, it gets you something else. I'm really happy to have that something else in my marriage. I don't want it in my business. Getting fucked in business is always painful.
I'll tell you. Okay, so we have the six returns you expect in a business, and it also goes around something that we had talked about in regards to a guide to growing your business through formulas. And so a lot of the things that we were talking around in these six returns we expect in a business, there's formulas associated with it. You were talking with your hands, and for those who are just listening, you didn't get to see any of that. But I mean, it totally makes sense. These are formulas we need to follow for all six of these things. And we, like I said, we focused in on three because most of our listeners are really needing to hone in on this. But stop focusing in on cost. You know, you need to come outside and build your business, acumen, and really focus in on many of the things that Preston was talking about today. Preston Brown, great conversation. How does the B2B DM gang get in touch with you?
So all of my social medias are the Preston Brown. I mean, reach out to me there. And message me questions. I mean, we try to answer every question we have on our social media. You know, I have a belief. Like, I mean, I have 18 companies. One of them is a coaching company. And if you want all that, that's fine. But I frankly think somebody who wants to work out can get outside and go running. That gym, the outdoors, the great outdoors is free. What does that mean? Well, that means that you want to go work out. You want to get thin. You want to get healthy. Okay, well, you know, eat healthy and go outside and run, right? So I think information should be free. You guys message me anything on my social media. My team will answer it. We will send you all the formulas, all the documents, everything. Jim, I'm going to send them to you too. That way you have them, because it's really easy. Success leaves clues. Everybody's heard it. All we did differently was we just documented it. We just documented what the clues were. And you know what we found? I mean, guys, I've coached Wall Street entrepreneurs. I've coached Well, now I have a group called YBL where literally we got 4 billionaires. We got tons of millionaires and centimillionaires and decamillionaires. Like, we travel the world together. Like, I coach all these people. The formulas work in every industry, every business on earth. It's problem solving formulas. It's solution creation formulas. There's three things you measure, there's three goals, 4 things you measure, 6 things you change. That's all there is to it. We will send them all to you. You want coaching, message us about that. We have that too. But like, really? All of this is free. Like, we will give you the formulas for free. You could look at the documents. You can see the 6 returns. You can say, oh, in my business, I should measure culture, clarity, capacity, and cash. We talked about just one piece of the cash formula. Okay. Well, if progress equals happiness, and imagine culture is one finger on your hand, clarity is another finger on your hand, capacity is another finger on your hand, and cash is another finger. Well, these 4 fingers aren't the same thing, but they're kind of tethered together, right, Jim? And obviously the listeners won't see this, but the people watching the podcast can see this. If I'm holding up 4 fingers, hiding my thumb, naming each of those fingers one of the C's, progress equals happiness. What's progress mean? Going up. Well, most entrepreneurs are doing the right thing. They're just doing it at the wrong stage. So if I have an anchor in cash, it doesn't matter what I'm doing in culture because the fingers are tethered. I'm stuck here. I need to go focus on where's the problem, solve the problem, correct the problem, advance. And once you've figured out the measurement, this is what's beautiful about all businesses, guys. This is so gorgeous and nobody gets it. There's 6 things you can change. Price, product, people, place, promotion, and process. Those are the only 6. My wife's got 150 dials in her makeup drawer. Message me on my social media. We'll answer any question. That costs you nothing. But guys, go out and take advantage. I mean, if it's okay, I want to say one last piece because it's hugely important. Everybody I know loves flowers. They're gorgeous, right? You know how to make flower? You take a seed. It's a wannabe flower. You shove it in a giant pile of shit. Okay? The shit is the problem. You add some water. A few weeks later, everybody around will lean down 6 inches above that pile of shit to smell the flower. All of you guys, like, we are literally in the biggest financial opportunity we've ever seen. That's what a recession is. You get these formulas now, you're all going to be set fucking free. You can literally change your life. I went from, and I was probably worth $3 to $5 million, to now I'm close to $250 million in the last 5 years. Everybody overestimates a year. They underestimate a decade. Get these formulas. They're fucking free. I'll give them to you, but go out and create because the opportunity is now.
Preston Brown, I'm glad you don't have any energy to bring to the table. Thank you for sharing your knowledge and wisdom, my friend, and we wish you the very best.
Thank you for joining us. Go now to join the B2B DM gang in the B2B Marketer LinkedIn group, where you can connect with other B2B DM disruptors and get access to our B2B DM cheat sheets, checklist, and guides. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, please help by going to iTunes to rate, review, and subscribe. And share the show on all of your digital platforms. Be sure to tune in next week for our next episode. And always remember, you can automate your lead capture, but you must lure your lead.